Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, April 22nd. I'm Bill Murphy here with Chris Sports. And we're going to start with the playoffs in both the NBA and the NHL. And I'll do baseball after I do that. We'll start with the Celtics. Chris Stapps Porzingis predicted the Celtics' first-round series against the Miami Heat would be a war. Bam Adebayo used the word dogfight to describe the team's fourth playoff meeting in 5 years. Game one, though, proved to be a walkover. The Celtics kicked off their latest quest for Banner 18 by breezing their perennial postseason nemesis, rooting the shorthanded Heat 114-94 Sunday afternoon at TD Garden. Jason Tatum notched his first career playoff triple-double, 23 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds, to lead Boston, which had six players reach double figures. Derek White scored 20 points, while Porzingis crashed 18 in his Celtics postseason debut, and Jaylen Brown added 17 points and 8 boards. As a team, the Celtics attempted 49 three-pointers and made 22 of them, 44.9%, tying a franchise playoff record. The Heat struggled from long range for much of the night, with 6 of their 12 made threes coming in the fourth quarter. Tatum went just 1-for-8 from 3, but Porzingis called his pace-setting performance perfect. That was a beautiful game from him, Porzingis said. Getting those assists, getting early on, he was not forcing anything too much, getting everybody involved. I think it's a huge credit to him, this game, how we all played as a team, because he got everybody feeling good early on. Miami, meanwhile, played without six-time All-Star Jimmy Butler, who was expected to miss several weeks after suffering an MCL injury during the play-in tournament. The Heat beat the Chicago Bulls without Butler on Friday to clinch the number 8 seed, but they were quickly outclassed by the top-seeded Seas. Game 2 is set for Wednesday night at 7 back at TD Garden. On Sunday, the Celtics raced out to a 9-0 lead, prompting Heat coach Eric Spoelstra to call his first timeout less than 2 minutes after tip-off. Brown had started with a three-pointer on the first possession and followed it up with a thunderous dunk on the next. Boston also got buckets from Porzingis, Tatum, and Drew Holiday before Adebayo scored Miami's first points to end an opening 14-0 Boston run. The Celtics never trailed, but led by just 5 at the end of the first quarter and 3 early in the second before a burst of bench scoring pushed its lead back to double digits. Sam Hauser hit 3-pointers on 3 consecutive possessions and then a 4th at the 8:37 mark of the quarter to help Boston reassert control. The third-year sharp shooter emerged as a key contributor during the regular season, and his 12 points Sunday nearly equaled his total from the Celtics' entire 2023 playoff run, 13, which infamously ended in an upset loss to Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals. Sam was a big reason for the win, Tatum said. They cut it to 3 or 4, and Sam hit 3 or 4 threes. You need things like that to be successful in the playoffs. The Celtics took a 15-point lead into halftime and put the game away with a dominant third quarter, burying the Heat with a relentless onslaught of threes. All 8 of Boston rotation players made at least 1 triple in the win, and White, Brown, and Al Horford all hit from deep as part of a 25-5 run to close out the third. The Celtics led by 32 entering the fourth quarter, though a late Heat push prevented head coach Joe Mazzulla from emptying his bench. Tempers flared in the final minute when Heat forward Caleb Martin upended Tatum while contesting a rebound. The dangerous play drew a foul on the ire of Tatum's Celtics teammates as Brown and Porzingis both had words for Martin after the whistle. Martin and Brown both were assessed technicals. Tatum stayed in the game and made both free throws. He's fine, said Mazzulla, who added that he enjoyed the team's response to Martin's hard foul. I wasn't hurt, Tatum added. And now over to the Knicks. Whatever percent healthy Joe Embiid was before game one between the Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers on Saturday evening sliced it in half. Embiid, one of the most dominant centers in all of basketball, flexed his particular brand of dominance with under 3 minutes left in the second quarter when he used an off-the-backboard alley-oop to himself to shed one Knicks defender, Mitchell Robinson, and posterize another guard Anunoby. And then he grabbed at his left knee and crumbled to the ground. Same left knee he underwent midseason surgery on to repair a meniscus in early February. And he had laid on the floor with his hand fixed on his forehead as the Knicks pushed the ball and scored off his made dunk. The Sixers then called a timeout, and team trainers escorted him to the locker room. No Embiid, no shot. The Knicks dominated minutes the reigning league MVP spent off the floor in Game 1. They won his resting minutes 11-6 at the top of the second quarter, then closed the period on a 9-0 run after he left the game due to injury. Those non-Embiid minutes were few and far between. Like a prize fighter, or maybe more like Paul Pierce, the star center emerged from the tunnel a full go. Embiid started the second half for the Sixers and played the entire third quarter before his scheduled rest at the top of the fourth. The Sixers' chances of winning Game 1, let alone the series, plummeted with his injury, then rose from the concrete with his emergence from the locker room. As for the Knicks, the game plan should be simple. Embiid underwent surgery in early February, aggravated his left knee in his final game of the regular season, then injured it again in the first half of Game 1. The Knicks must take advantage of Embiid's gimpy knee, be it with physical play or running him through actions to test his lateral movement. It's their only way to return to the second round of the playoffs against a Sixers team effectively deploying the best player in the series. Embiid has scored 15 points in the first quarter alone and had 18 first-half points before leaving the game with just under 3 minutes left in the second period. He was a step slow in Philadelphia's play-in tournament victory over the Miami Heat on Wednesday, and was still visibly limited in the first half on Saturday before his awkward landing on a generational poster dunk. Obviously, if you're averaging 34 points a game or 35 points a game, you're an elite scorer, and Embiid does it a lot of different ways, said Knicks head coach Tom Thibodeau ahead of tip-off on Saturday. So he can shoot the ball, he can put it on the floor, he can post up, he can offensive rebound. So we have to guard him with our team. We've got to try to make him work for his points. He's got to see people, and then we'll go from there. And after turning his knee, Embiid resigned himself as more of a jump shooter with shots falling well short due to his first half injury, which made him much more comfortable of a defensive assignment for Mitchell Robinson, whose size, length, and athleticism helped combat a limited Embiid in the second half. The star Sixers big man shot 6 of 11 in the first quarter, but shot 2 for 11 the rest of the night. Embiid's knee is now on inflammatory watch. Heat star Jimmy Butler suffered a similar injury in Wednesday's matchup against the Sixers. And now we're going to go over to hockey. This is from New York. Jimmy Vesey had a goal and assist. Artemi Panarin also scored. And the New York Rangers beat the Washington Capitals 4-1 on Sunday in Game 1 of their first-round playoff series. Matt Rempe and Chris Kreider also scored. Barclay Goodrow had 2 assists, and Igor Shesterkin finished with 20 saves to help the Rangers get the postseason off to a strong start. The Rangers, seeking their first Stanley Cup championship in 30 years, won their third straight and 11th in the last 14 games. New York's Peter Laviolette became the first coach in NHL history to take 6 different teams to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Martin Fehervary scored, and Charlie Lindgren stopped 27 shots for the Capitals, who had won 3 straight in 4 of their last 5 games, pairing the second wild card in the Eastern Conference. Game 2 of the best-of-7 series is Tuesday night. With the Rangers up 3-1, Vesey had a great chance to add to the lead in the opening minute of the third period. However, Lindgren stopped his initial attempt in close, and the rebound deflected off Vesey and went wide with Tom Wilson knocking it away. Kaapo Kakko had a shot go off the goalpost about 6 minutes into the period. Kreider made it 4-1 as he put a backhander past Lindgren on a breakaway from the right side with 3:43 left. It was his 41st postseason goal, extending his franchise record. The Rangers bottled up Capitals star Alex Ovechkin, who had no shots on goal. He was held without a shot only 5 times in 79 games during the season. After a scoreless first period in which the teams combined for 11 shots on goal, there were 4 goals in the second period. Rempe got the Rangers on the scoreboard first, sweeping in the puck from the left side of a deflection across the front of the net by Vesey at 4:17. Panarin, who had a career-high 49 goals during the regular season, made it 2-0 just 33 seconds later at 4:50 as he fired a shot past Lindgren from the right circle. Alex Lafreniere knocked defenseman Vincent Iorio off the puck and shoulder-first into the boards. Lafreniere then sent the puck to Trocheck, who sent across to Panarin for the goal. Iorio went to the dressing room after the play and did not return. Vesey made it 3-0 as he got the puck off a draw on the right circle and fired it past Lindgren at 6:23. Rempe in front knocked down Beck Malmsteen to give Vesey some space for the shot. Fahervary deflected a shot by Wilson off his foot and passed Sheskarin to put the Capitals on the scoreboard at 7:31. Rempe was whistled for charging to give the Capitals a power play. 2:07 into the game, the Capitals managed just 1 shot on goal. They were in the advantage and had several blocked shots, or shots blocked, I should say. After a shot by Nick Dowd at 4:50 for the second of the game, Washington didn't manage another shot on goal until Dylan Strome's attempt with 2:01 left in the period and Wilson's follow on the rebound. Both teams had 2 power plays in the first period, and neither could take advantage. The Rangers improved to 21-9 in the openers of a 7-game series at home. And before we move on to baseball, I want to give you the Bruins schedule. They are going to play their first round against the Maple Leafs. Oh, that'll be game 2, Monday. Let's see if I'm reading this right. NHL first round versus Maple Leafs, game 2, Monday, 7 p.m. at Maple Leafs. Game 3, Wednesday, 7 p.m. at Maple Leafs. Game 4, Saturday, 8 p.m. I don't know if I confused you, but we'll keep up on that as the week goes by. Now over to baseball. Let me give you the scores. First of all, yesterday, Sunday, Washington 6, Houston nothing, Philadelphia 8, Chicago White Sox 2, Cincinnati 3, LA Angels nothing, Yankees 5, Tampa Bay 4, we'll have a story on that, Boston 6, Pittsburgh 1, we'll have a story on that, Cleveland 6, Oakland 2, Detroit 6, Minnesota 1, Baltimore 5, Kansas City nothing. There were 2 games played out in Colorado. They had been frozen out, I think, the day before. Colorado won 2-1 in game 1 in 10 innings, and Seattle came back to win that second game. I don't have the score, but I know they won. And in another game, San Diego 6, Toronto 3, and Texas and Atlanta was a late game. I believe Texas won that game, and that was the Sunday night game. If I missed anything over here in the National League, Cincinnati, I gave you that one. Milwaukee 2, St. Louis nothing, Miami 6, Chicago Cubs 3, and the Dodgers beat the Mets 10-0. We'll have a story on that. And that's it. Now let's do the stories on the baseball teams, the local teams. First, we'll start with the Red Sox. Willier Abreu had 3 hits and drove in 2 runs. And the Boston Red Sox beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 6-1 on Sunday to complete a 3-game sweep. Abreu's RBI single off Martin Perez, 1-1, in the third, gave the Red Sox the lead for good. He added another RBI single in the sixth as Boston continued its strong play away from Fenway Park. Reese McGuire added a pinch-hit 2-run single for the Red Sox, who improved to 10-3 on the road so far this season. Boston bounced back after a bumpy homestand by keeping the Pirates in check yet again. Justin Slayton, 1-0, worked 2 scoreless innings in relief to earn the victory as the Red Sox road ERA dropped to 1.45. Perhaps just as importantly, Boston found a way to take care of the Pirates without third baseman Rafael Devers and outfielder Tyler O'Neill. O'Neill's on the injured list. I think he's going to be back, though, for the next series the Red Sox play. And Devers didn't play in the series while nursing a bone bruise in his knee, forcing the Red Sox to rely even more on players such as the 24-year-old Abreu. Asked how his team has responded despite having so many key players unavailable, Manager Alex Cora just shrugged. Youth, to be honest with you, he said, they don't know any better. Some of them, you know, they just show up every day willing to work. Okay, Brian Hayes had two of Pittsburgh's seven hits and drove in the Pirates' only run with a first inning sacrifice fly. Pittsburgh has dropped six straight to fall to 500, 11-11 for the first time this season. It was a sloppy game, Pirates manager Derek Shelton said. We didn't play well. You can point out multiple things that we need to clean up. In certain situations, guys are trying to do a little too much. In certain situations, we just played sloppy. The Pirates have scored just nine runs during their slide and did little against five Red Sox pitchers. Pittsburgh didn't help itself with a couple of base running mistakes to take away scoring opportunities. Haynes and Jack Sawinski both were thrown out at second, Hayes in the fourth, Sawinski in the sixth, trying to grab an extra base in hopes of sparking a struggling offense. Perez labored through four-plus innings. The veteran left-hander, who had been sharp in his first four starts with the Pirates, gave up four runs in four-plus innings with four walks and seven strikeouts. Perez left in the fifth after Abreu led off with a double and Connor Wong walked. Pittsburgh reliever Ryder Ryan came on and gave up a flare to center by McGuire, a former Pirates prospect, then made it 4-1, more than enough considering Pittsburgh's current issues at the plate. Josh Winkowski, a reliever these days, made his first start since last August, and just his second since the end of the 2022 season for Boston. The right-hander worked 3 1/3 innings, giving up one run and three hits with a strikeout before being removed after 46 pitches. Winkowski is optimistic that what the starting pitchers have done without Lucas Giolito with an elbow surgery is sustainable. People are saying we need help in the rotation and that the rotation sinks and whatnot, Winkowski said. So really happy for all the guys to be proving everyone wrong. And we're going to go on to the Yankees. Prior to Luis Gil's fourth start of the season, Aaron Boone was asked about the righty's command and potential. Gil had not shown much of the former over his first three starts, walking 14 batters just over as many innings. That includes seven free passes against the Blue Jays on April 15th. However, the potential has been evident as Gil's high 90s heat and secondary stuff had yielded 20 strikeouts. Even with the walks, he had limited opponents to six runs. Man, if he's in the strike zone, he's going to give us a great chance to win. He, at his best, can shut down anyone, Aaron Boone said. He's still growing as a player and a big leaguer, but he's capable of big things. We've seen more than just flashes of that. Such was the case on Sunday. O'Gill walked three more batters against the Rays. The 25-year-old set a new career high with nine strikeouts in a 5-4 Yankees win. Gil didn't allow an earned run while totaling two hits and 97 pitches over 5 2/3 innings. He exited to a nice ovation from a modest crowd at Yankee Stadium. Boone said that Gil and pitching coach Matt Blake worked on the hurler's mechanics, particularly getting his shoulders in line after his erratic start in Toronto. The adjustments paid off as Tampa Bay needed Gil's help to score off him on Sunday. The Rays' one run off Gil came in the third inning when the starter airmailed a pickoff throw to second base, which sent Jose Caballero to third. Caballero dancing off the bag then pestered Gil into a balk that tied the game at one. Yankees unknotted the game in the fifth, though, as Alex Verdugo picked up a two-run single with the bases loaded and two away. Jose Trevino and Oswaldo Cabrera then added one-run knocks. The Yankees scored their first run on Anthony Rizzo's single in the first. The Rays scored two more runs on an Ahmad Rosario double off Dennis Santana in the eighth. The righty allowed another run when Curtis Meade singled, but Victor Gonzalez closed things out in the ninth with Clay Holmes unavailable. And while things got close at the end, the Yankees' busy fifth frame set them up for a series-clinching victory. The team will now turn its attention to the Las Vegas, Sacramento, Oakland Athletics. The A's, scuffling a few games below 500, will play four games in the Bronx this week as the Yankees look to pad their lead in the American League East. Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman, Clark Schmidt, and Nestor Cortes are the Yankees' probable pitchers for the series. J.P. Sears, traded from the Yankees to Oakland in the Frankie Montas deal, will take the ball in Monday's opener, which begins at 1:05 p.m. due to Passover. Paul Blackburn, Joe Boyle, and Alex Wood are also slated to start for Oakland during the series. And now over to the Mets. The streak had to stop sometime. Going for a sweep of the Dodgers after winning six straight, right-hander Adrian Hauser imploded on the mound Sunday, giving up 10 earned runs, including six in the fifth inning alone. Behind a dominant performance by right-hander Tyler Glasnow, the Mets were shut out 10-0 on Sunday at Dodger Stadium. The comeback magic that has defined the last month for the Mets, who are 12-9, was nowhere to be found. Glasnow, 4-1, was too good, and the mountain was too steep to climb. Hauser was effective. He's 0-2 now, and he was effective the first time through the lineup, but a two-run homer by Shohei Ohtani in the third put the Mets down 2-0. Back in the first inning, Hauser handled Ohtani relatively easily getting ahead on the DH and striking him out on a slider in the dirt. But in the third, with one on and one out, Hauser's slider hung up over the middle of the plate, and Ohtani drove it 423 feet into the left field stands to break Hideki Matsui's record for the most home runs hit by a Japanese-born player with 176 of his career. Hauser could barely get the ball over the plate in the fifth. He walked the first two hitters before giving up an RBI single to Mookie Betts. Ohtani's infield single loaded the bases with one out, with Freddie Freeman scoring two on a double. Will Smith followed with another two-run double to put Los Angeles up 7-0, prompting organist Dieter Ruhl to play the NFL on Fox theme song. Grant Hartwig, called up earlier in the day from AAA Syracuse with left-hander Brooks Raley injured, came in to replace Hauser. He walked Max Muncy to put two on with none out. Finally, Hartwig got two outs, but Andy Pages then came up to the plate for the second time in the inning. The Cuban rookie launched his first career home run, drilling a 1-1 sinker over the center field wall, putting the Dodgers up by a touchdown and a field goal. A little football in here. The familiar Sunday refrain came from the organ once again. Hauser was charged with 8 earned runs on 7 hits over more than 4 innings. Walks have become an issue for him in recent outings, with the former Milwaukee Brewers righty walking 5 in his last time out against the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Mets have bailed him out and won anyway, taking him off the hook for a decision. There was no such luck this time. Glasnow tossed 8 shutout frames in a stellar performance. The Mets got 7 hits against him, but struck out 10. Tyrone Taylor, who grew up a Dodgers fan in nearby Torrance, struck out with the bases loaded in the 8th. Taking 2 of 3 from the Dodgers, who are 13-11, on the road was a solid start to this two-city California swing. The Mets will look to regroup in San Francisco on Monday night as they open a 3-game series against the Giants at Oracle Park. And I have a story on the Yard Goats. Spencer Jones went 3-for-4 and smashed a first-inning home run as Somerset defeated the Hartford Yard Goats in New Jersey on Sunday. Reliever Dylan Spain took the loss for the Yard Goats, giving up 2 runs and retiring just 1 batter in the 6th inning. Seth Halverson didn't fare much better in the 7th, pitching 2/3 of an inning and giving up 5 runs in what ended up being a Somerset runaway. The Yard Goats fell to 8-5 with the loss. They'll return to action on Tuesday at home against the Boston Red Sox affiliate, the Portland Sea Dogs. And I'm going to tell you what's on the air, and then I want to start a story on UConn spring football, but I'm not going to have time to finish it because it's a long article, but I will do the baseball. As I mentioned before, the Yankees and the A's are playing an afternoon game, 1 p.m. today. That's on YES, also on the Major League Baseball Network. 7:30 p.m., the Chicago White Sox are at Minnesota. That's on FS1. And 9:30 p.m., the Mets at San Francisco, SNY, Radio 880. The Red Sox are not off. They will be starting to play Tuesday night at the Cleveland Guardians, and that'll be a 6 p.m. game. Now, in basketball, in the NBA Eastern Conference first-round playoff, Orlando at Cleveland, Game 2 on the NBA TV network. 7:30 p.m. Eastern Conference first round playoff, Philadelphia at New York. Game two, that's on TNT. 10 p.m. Western Conference first round playoff, L.A. Lakers at Denver. Game two, TNT. Now in hockey, 7 p.m. Eastern Conference first round playoff, Toronto at Boston. Game two, ESPN. 7:30 p.m. Eastern Conference first round playoff, New York Islanders at Carolina. Game two, ESPN 2. 9:30 p.m. Western Conference first round playoff, Vegas at Dallas. Game one, that's on ESPN. And finally at 10 p.m. Western Conference first round playoff, Los Angeles at Edmonton. Game one, and that is on ESPN 2. And I will start the article on UConn football. I will have to cut it short when the time runs out. UConn football showed off some shiny new pieces as it took to the on-campus Marone Stadium for its Spring Fan Fest on Sunday, where it hosted an open practice for fans, parents, and a handful of recruits. The Huskies, with new assistants supporting head coach Jim Mora in his third season, expect to have a bit of a different look as they seek improvement from a 3-9 record in the fall. The offseason, after Mora's worst record in his 12th year as the head coach, was challenging in a good way, he said. You've got to attack every single day because there's a lot that we have to get accomplished, he said. For me, it's kind of invigorating. The challenge, I like challenges. It's been very, very positive, especially coming off what was a disappointing year record-wise for us. We've been able to build on the positives and kind of flush the negatives and hopefully grow from those. I'm excited about where we are. I really am. We've got a million things that we've got to do better, a million things we've got to do better, but I'm encouraged by the direction we're headed. Mora and Seth brought in a number of high-level transfers to supplement the wave of departures that hit after the season. They'll continue shopping until the window closes on April 30th, looking to continue adding depth and potentially a few starters. The early arriving newcomers, specifically on the offensive side of the ball, stood out Sunday. Freshman Cole Welliver, a 6'6" gunslinger straight out of Liberty Christian High in Texas, where he played for the Dallas Cowboys legend Jason Witten, quarterbacked the third stringers and had the play of the day near the end of the 11-11 drill. And let me continue. I think I have a couple more minutes. Firing a perfect spiral about 40 yards down the left sideline, Welliver connected with receiver Jackson Harper from Simsbury, who did enough toe-tapping and foot-dragging for the catch to be called complete on the field. The offense simulated what would have happened in a real game, getting to the line before anyone could call for a challenge, and fumbled a rush snap. It was a glimpse of what the team hopes is a bright future. Welliver will likely start his career behind the older Joe Fagnano and Tuan Roberson, who are again competing for the starting job, which Fagnano earned after last year's camp. He started two games before suffering a season-ending shoulder injury against Georgia State. Elsewhere on offense, it was running backs Jaden Mel Brown and Darrell Robinson, who stood out alongside former Wisconsin receiver Skylar Bell. Brown, described by new offensive coordinator and former offensive line coach Gordon Samis as a jitterbug, played in a similar offensive system over his two seasons at Gardner-Webb and is an influx of speed and shiftiness in the backfield. Robinson from Charlotte brings more power like returner Cam Edwards, who missed Sunday's practice with turf toe. With Rosa feeling faster and ready to develop as a pass catcher out of the backfield, Moore feels that the running back room is one of the team's strongest areas. Bell, who had 30 plus catches in each of the last two seasons at Wisconsin, joins the receiver room where Brett Buckham, a second-year Husky from Delaware, is prepared to step into the lead role. The Huskies will hit the portal looking for more depth in that area and on the offensive line, where they lost Christian Haynes, a potential NFL draft pick, and center Noel Ofori Nayadu transferred to Colorado. I think we've done a good job of implementing ourselves as leaders and continuing to grow our room, and not only our room, but the entire team, said right tackle Chase Lunt, readying for his fifth season with the Huskies. And we're going to stop there. That is the end of the sports for today, and I'd like to wish you a very pleasant evening. So long.